We're back on Rob Bird's Moondog Show. Chris Siriano here in the studio from the House of David Museum, and Mason Dixon over here looking up some information about our next guest who's on the phone, Phil S. Dixon. He is an author, and he is also a Negro League historian and a man of most knowledge when it comes to that, for sure. Good morning to you, Phil.
Hey, good morning.
Well, yeah.
Always honor to be here to talk a little baseball.
Well, I mean, and likewise, the previous segment, we were talking about the trip that myself and Louie took down to Kansas City to come down there, drive down, work with you one day, and then turn around and drive back. And from what I do remember, it was hotter than it was hot down there that day.
Yeah, you guys were like the barnstormers at the House of David. So you put a House of David and coming down here and then leaving the next day.
But it was you know, I think we did the interview. It's probably got 2.5 hours on, and you know, really, in the whole baseball part of the documentary is about 35 minutes long. So, you know, we've got just so much more with you. But I don't know how all that's going to work out at the moment. But hopefully someday we'll be able to use all of it. But I guess first things first is, how did you get into, you know, writing, and you know, how did you get into doing that about the Negro Leagues?
Well, the interesting thing is the House of David, the Kansas City Monarchs, and my interest in the Negro Leagues all happened probably about the same time. I was a kid who collected baseball cards, followed baseball from elementary school, and we're talking about 1964. So I just compiled a lot of information in my mind, my memory about baseball. I played baseball. My first coach was Sherman Roadblock Jones, who used to pitch for the New York Mets. He was the coach the first time I ever put on a real uniform. And so I had good instruction and went through the 60s and played high school ball in the 70s. But then when I got to about 1980, I met a guy who played for the Kansas City Monarchs. His name was Carol Ray Motho, and I met him in Topeka, Kansas. And he began to talk about baseball that I knew nothing of. And that was the beginning of taking interest in the Negro Leagues. And at that particular time, there might have been 4 or 5 books out. There weren't many. And so I decided that I was going to write about this history. And it just so happens he directed me to some other people. And I met a guy named Maurice Doolittle Young, who played for the Colored House of David. And he actually tried to join the colony. But he had to prove that he has so much Indian blood, and I guess he didn't have enough, and he never got in. Wow. But he had photographs of Benjamin Parnell and, you know, Doc Talley and Anderson. He had these photographs, and that was the first time I had seen them. Then he began to tell me about the interaction that they had, and that's why it all happened nearly at the same time. And then although I finished the book in 1980, I published it in 1992, and there was a big section of the House of David right in the book.
Okay. You know, when you talk about the Negro Leagues and the House of David, you talk about this in the documentary, how, you know, there's the major leagues, but the major leagues is just a teeny tiny piece of baseball and how the baseball, how it's been shaped and how it shaped our nation and all that stuff. So, you know, what is that, the significance of, you know, baseball outside of the major leagues?
Well, there were many towns who had no minor league teams, but they had good town baseball. And so we're going to talk about the Midwest. And so let's talk about through Texas, Iowa, Kansas, Missouri, North Dakota, South Dakota. And that was the territory, including naturally Michigan, that the House of David would travel through. And they would pick up all these cities. And so baseball, as it was played in the minor leagues, had to have pretty much a certain population. But since the House of David or the Kansas City Monarchs were barnstorming through there, you know, they didn't have to have like an ongoing crowd.
Right.
So they could build a big crowd. And of course, the House of David would come through and play the Kansas City Monarchs. And Tom Baird who was the co-owner of the Kansas City Monarchs, began booking the House of David along with Ray L. Doan out of Muscatine, Iowa. So it was quite a relationship they had with the Kansas City Monarchs out here west. And, you know, I know you just made me think about the House of David. You know, they might play 180, 190 games a year, sometimes 200 games a year, playing practically every night and doubleheaders on the weekend, that type of thing. And when they travel, you know, you guys came down, at least you had the benefit of an air conditioner.
Right.
They had the windows down.
So. Yeah. And from what I heard, those guys were so into playing baseball that they always wore their uniforms, even when they're traveling in their cars. I'm just kidding about that, the old cotton uniforms. But, you know, it's one of those things when you look back at it, you know, especially barnstorming, these guys are going every night. You know, a lot of their games, sometimes they had to go a considerable distance away, but a lot of times they had someone who was trying to keep the schedule close. So they may have to go a half hour, 45 minutes or an hour, but they just went all over the place. And, you know, what did that mean to baseball at that time?
Well, it put baseball in places at a very high level where people ordinarily wouldn't have seen it. And so that helped people to have an ongoing interest in baseball. And, of course, the House of David, you know, the way they looked was an attraction. Of course, they come into town and they're playing a black team, and some of these towns didn't have that many black people. And so they're seeing this excellent baseball that was being played by both teams. And yeah, it definitely elevated the game. And I think 1931, when House of David signed Grover Cleveland Alexander to come out and pitch a few innings, man, that really changed the perception of the House of David
right.
going into the 1930s.
Yeah. Chris, you got a question for Phil?
Yeah, I just love listening to him.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot. Well, if you just want to sit there and be quiet, I mean, that's fine with me.
I got questions.
Well, all right, you lost your question privileges, Chris. I'm kidding. Go ahead, Mason.
So, Mr. Dixon, I growed up watching, remember that What's Happening? You remember that show?
Sure.
And that was the first time I heard of the Negro Leagues. You remember that episode? They Raj was in the hospital, and he found out that his roommate had played baseball, and he looked him up, and he found out that he didn't.
Funny, but I do remember that episode.
So was that based on a true baseball player? Do you remember? Or
it was not. It was not. But the interesting thing is, because people knew so little about the Negro Leagues, you could just make up a name and it sound pretty cool.
Right.
It's, oh, he must have played in the Negro Leagues, because, you know, there were a lot of interesting names that are already floating around, like Satchel Paige and Cool Papa Bell, Buck Leonard, you know. Mm-hmm. So those names are already floating around. So, you know, you just make up a really cool name. I can't remember the name they used, but I know later on in the TV show, I think they had a guy named Buck Henry, that name popped around. Of course, there was no Buck Henry.
Right,
but,
right.
For TV, hey, it works out perfectly to get people's interest.
Yeah, right. Well, we have to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to still have Phil S. Dixon on the phone, author and historian of the Negro Leagues, when we come back on Rob Bird's Moondog Show.
If you're looking for some fresh new music, check out the music of the Trussin' Bird Band. Find all their music wherever you do your streaming. You can also find them on iTunes if you would like to purchase it for your collection. Trussin' Bird Band's music is a gritty mix of rock, blues, pop, and a little bit of reggae and country in the mix. Check out TrussinBirdBand.com to see all their music videos and find out more about this amazing group of musicians. That's TrussinBirdBand.com. TrussinBirdBand.com.
So meticulous, it's ridiculous.
Are you planning a painting project and don't know who to call? Decorator's Choice Painting Company is one of the most highly referred services along the lakeshore. Serving this area for over 20 years, we look forward to providing professional services for you. Call us today at 269-270-5785 or email us at decoratorschoicesh@gmail.com. Take a look at our work at decoratorschoicesh.com.
So meticulous, it's ridiculous.
You're listening to Rob Bird's Moondog Show on WCSY-FM, South Haven.
Rob Bird's Moondog Show!
We're back on Rob Bird's Moondog Show. Mason Dixon, Chris Siriano here in the studio, and Phil S. Dixon, author and Negro League historian, or really baseball historian. I'm sure you probably know a whole lot about baseball other than just the Negro Leagues and the House of David, too. But, you know, in the documentary, Claire Adkin, who was in it, he was talking about Cool Papa Bell, who was maybe the fastest, you know, back then, and maybe even the fastest in all of baseball ever. I don't know if we ever know that. You got to size up people like Ricky Henderson, who was absolutely amazing when he got on base, you know, and then became a fantastic hitter. But how do you compare those two? Was it any comparison between Cool Papa Bell and Ricky Henderson?
Well, you know, Cool would come down and meet all the great stolen base leaders during his time in St. Louis. He came down, and I've seen pictures with him and Lou Brock and those kind of things. He was highly respected because of his ability. Now, it's always tough to compare people who never ran against each other. However, Cool Papa told me the story one time that he was playing and Jesse Owens was there. And they were going to race to see who was the fastest. Yep. And Jesse Owens didn't have his track shoes. Somebody said, "Give him a pair of those baseball spikes." He said, "I'm not racing that man in those baseball spikes. They're too heavy."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was his excuse. His shoes were in his shoes were in his bag. Jesse didn't want to lose that day to a baseball player.
That could have been, but Cool Papa was exceptionally brilliant runner. And I remember he told me a story. He said that he stole so many bases and people thought that he was so fast that occasionally he would cheat. So they were using two umpires. So somebody hit, say, a drive out to the outfield, and he'd look at the home plate umpire and he'd look at the umpire in the field and he'd look where they were looking. So instead of going to second base, he would cut the grass close to the base and keep on running, sliding to third base. And the third baseman said, "Man, you really are fast." Yeah.
He took a third less steps than everybody else had to.
Yeah.
Smart guy. But
he had another great storyteller. You sit around, and I had the honor of being able to do that at his home. And his wife, Clara Bell, was her name. And I will always remember Clara Bell because when you would go there, Cool Papa in his later years was not doing so well with his health, and she would always say, "I'm sicker than he is," but she looked much more healthier than he was, and she died first. If somebody says they're sicker than he is, now I do believe them.
Now, was he called Cool Papa Bell because he was just cool, or when he ran past you, he'd freeze you out?
Well, he got that name from Bill Gatewood, and because when he came out, he was about 22 years old, and he pitched like a veteran. Said, "Hey, this guy's pretty cool here, you know," and he didn't get rattled by much. And so when the old timers used to sit around, they were the ones who gave you your nicknames. They looked how you ran and what you ate. Right. They knew where you came from, how you dressed. And that's how you got your nickname.
Yeah, I played baseball, and we all had nicknames for sure.
What was your nickname there?
Huge.
Really?
Yes, they got that from the shower room.
Round down.
So, Chris, I know you got to ask a question over there.
Yeah. Hey, Phil, we're super pumped about the reception of the movie already. And, you know, it's just hitting right now and exploding all over Michigan and hopefully across the country. And Rob and I have talked extensively about taking off on Chapter 2 of the next movie and really focusing hard on baseball. And you know, other than yourself and Leighton Revelle over at the Center for Negro League Research in Carrollton, Texas, and a few other people, I really wanted to pick your brain about who's out there, and you don't have to say names, but do you know people that you could connect us to that would have experience.
Yeah, I'd like to be a part of something like this.
That would have experienced playing against the House of David teams back then that were part of the Negro Leagues.
Yeah, boy, it's going to be tough finding some guys now. The ones that I had met, the last one I had met was Wayne Terwilliger, who was, at that particular time, he was a batting coach for the Minnesota Twins, and I saw his name in a box score, and this is back in the 80s, and I saw the name Terwilliger. Then I looked where he was from. It was up in that area. around St. Joe, Michigan. I said, wait a minute, this couldn't be that many guys named Terwilliger.
Yeah, right.
So, and it just so happened I was working for the Royals at that time, and I had a press pass, and I could just go downstairs. And of course, I went to him and asked him if he ever played for the House of David. He said he did. And so later on, he wrote a letter to me regarding some other players. But, man, yeah, it's going to be hard to find some people. There might still be some around the late 50s. But, yeah, I'd love to talk to them. And I think that would be pretty interesting conversation.
Yeah. And I, you know, I thought if there's any, and I, can I see on your site, I watch your site every night when you post about stuff. And, you know, there, I just thought if there's any old, Negro League guys that would have remembered playing against these whiskered guys from Benton Harbor, maybe we could get their story if they remember. And that's,
yeah,
I just wanted you to get to thinking about that. And maybe next month we can talk about
or,
it.
Or even, you know, a child of someone who remembers those stories going to the park with their dad or something like that.
Right. Right. I know there were a few guys, who were recruited probably because Tom Baird was here in Kansas City. One of them I know, Joe Ignatic, who lived in Kansas City, Kansas, who played. And there were a few others that ended up going to the House of David because of the Monarch connection. And so, you know, they ran across a lot of good ball players. And so Tom Baird could send them straight to Ray L. Doan.
Right. You know,
I know when I did, when I wrote my Dizzy Dean book, there was a guy named Mickey Finn, and I've never been able to identify what his real first name was, but he was out of Wichita, and he caught the Deans in 1934 at the end of the season in the game in Wichita, and Ray L. Doan was promoting that tour as well, and so Ray L. Doan saw him, and the next year, Mickey Finn was with the House of David.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm still looking for the guy's first name, but I have found pictures of him.
Okay. Hey, we need to take a break here, but before we do, I'm going to have Mason, because you have so much knowledge. What are some of those books that Phil S. Dixon has written?
You can go to Amazon.com and type in Phil S. Dixon, and you'll find Phil Dixon's American Baseball Chronicles, the Dizzy and Daffy Dean Barnstorming Tour, Phil John Buck O'Neill, and the Negro Baseball Leagues, and Kansas City Baseball. You got about 10 books, it looks like.
Yeah. And it's been fun. So, yeah,
Are you writing one now? A new one?
Well, I'm working in a new one. I'm still pushing my last one that came out just in the spring. As a matter of fact, the whole last chapter is called Barnstorming with the House of David. And Buck O'Neill gave me stories about Barnstorming with the House of David. And so the last chapter is about the House of David.
Well, let's talk about that. Are you good enough to stay with us for another segment?
Sure.
Perfect. Well, we'll be back in just a second with Phil S. Dixon, author and historian of the Negro Leagues, right here on Rob Bird's Moondog Show.
Hi, Nicole Galata here with Galata Imagery, your South Haven local photographer. Specializing in family and wedding photography, I also photograph engagement, maternity, seniors, and so much more. Find me on Facebook and Instagram or on my website at galataimagery.com.
It is true. You can get quality social media marketing, radio time, and video production in one place. Moondog Productions specializes in all three. Now is the time to increase your presence and keep yourself in the public eye. Through Rob Bird's Moondog Show, Moondog Productions offers radio advertising, social media marketing, and video production that will get you noticed. Call Moondog Productions at 269-872-3049 to find out how we can design a program that will fit your budget.
Rob Bird's Moondog Show.
We're back on Rob Bird's Moondog Show. Chris Siriano, House of David Museum, and Mason Dixon, real cool guy here in the studio.
Thanks, Rob. You never called me real cool guy.
I know. And I typically don't. And, of course, Phil S. Dixon is on the phone, author and historian, Negro Leagues, and a man of massive wealth about baseball. And you were just talking about your last book as you kind of got a new little project, but you're working on getting out the last book and getting it sold and all that stuff. What was the name of that book? And I think just possibly... the name of that book, you had a poster behind you when we shot the interview.
Yeah, now that was another book I wrote related to Buck O'Neill. This one is called John Bucknell, The Rookie, His Words, His Voice. And the reason I titled that is because I use 11 QR codes. And if you scan these QR codes in the book, you could actually hear Bucknell being interviewed by myself in 1985. And that predates any interview you saw with Ken Burns in the baseball series. If your listeners know about that. Wow. And so we were talking about his 1938 season when we did these interviews. And interesting, we were going to do the 1938 season first. We're going to talk about that one. I had real specific questions. We're going to go through 39 next and 40. We're going to go through all these years at the Monarchs. So we did 1938, but it took us 4 hours to do the interview. So we were so tired that we never got around to doing the rest of the year.
Wow.
So I had this information. But it just so happens that that year, they ended the season by playing a series of barnstorming games that started in Rock Island, Illinois, and then they went to Waterloo, Iowa. They were over in Rock Valley, Lincoln, Nebraska, Concordia, Kansas, Manhattan. Then they ended up in Oklahoma City. But these games were played against the House of David, and that was also the year that Grover Cleveland Alexander was placed into the Baseball Hall of Fame, and he wasn't so excited about it because there wasn't any money behind it. He said, the Hall of Fame is fine, but it doesn't mean bread and butter. It's only your picture on a wall.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's a doorstop.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's true. But it was awfully interesting what was going on during that time and all the different guys that were on the team with the House of David. There were some pretty interesting players. And there was one guy on the team, by the way, who died in World War II.
Okay.
In Europe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, when I look at a lot of these old pictures and see some of the stadiums, it almost looks like it was more fun to go see a game, even though you're sitting on a real hard wood bench. It just seemed like there was more atmosphere, there was more life to those games.
Yeah, you know, the parks were pretty intimate. And back in those days, standing room only meant standing on the actual baseball field, a little bit different than it is now. So when they ran out of seats, they would rope the field off, and then people would stand down the first baseline. They stand behind the outfielder. So you can't get much more intimate than that.
No, no. Super cool. Considering how many people I think that baseballs kill a year or really injure. And right. I mean, there's some serious injuries that happen in the major leagues with bats being broke and bats flying out of hands and balls. When they're flying at 130 miles an hour and hit you in the gourd, that maybe do some damage. But, so being that close to the field, obviously I don't think those balls had the same jump back in those days, but boy, what a dangerous place to stand and watch a game.
But you know what? You got to love it, right?
You better, and you better be watching. And that's the thing about baseball, though. Even if you, no matter where you are in the stands, you better always have your eye on the ball. You have to. That's the game. Eye on the ball.
That is true. And you know, in 1938, you know, Eddie Lick was still with the team, Jesse Doc Talley and George Anderson, John Tucker. And they had a few other guys that played minor league ball. It's pretty good players. And so the Monarchs got a chance to see all of these great players through the years. And so it was really fun to talk about some of these guys.
For sure. There was a guy, Double Duty Redcliffe, that lived in downtown Chicago in a little tiny apartment. And Lloyd Dallagher, who was kind of the guy that took me under his wing to teach me the whole House of David story. He was a catcher for the House of David, and Double Duty was the catcher in the same game on a few different occasions. And he kept wanting me to take him over to see him, but I could never make that connection, which he died a couple years later. But did you ever get a chance to interview him?
I did not. Double Duty, I knew him very well, very okay. well. Got a chance. I don't know if I talked to him specifically about the House of David, but we sure talked a whole lot of baseball. And Double Duty was a great interview. I remember I was up in Minnesota, and Double Duty and I were on the same program. This was in the 1980s. And Double Duty had the classic statement. He said, if God made anything better than baseball and a woman, he kept it for himself.
Hey, Phil, how important was it to have a team like the House of David playing with black teams?
You know what? They were breaking down the color barrier long before the major leagues were. A good example of that is the 1934 House of David team that played in the Denver Post Tournament. Mm-hmm. Grover Cleveland Alexander was the manager, and they wanted to win that tournament. So Ray L. Doan, who was the promoter, sent a wire back to Pittsburgh and said he wanted a pitcher and a catcher. And it was the Monarchs' first year in the tournament. And actually, it was their only year in the tournament.
Well, that was the first year that they allowed Negro teams to play, right?
That is correct.
Yes.
And so there had been one black player who had played before, a guy named Congo Collins out of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I just got through talking about him last week. But yeah, for a team. So the House of David, who played the Monarchs often, knew that to beat them, they needed some more pitching. Mm-hmm. So instead of going out and getting another white player, they went out and got Satchel Paige and Bill Perkins, and they brought in a black battery, and they ended up winning the tournament.
Right. Huh. And to go on with that story, Satchel Paige did not beat the House of, or did not win both of those games against the Monarchs. He won the first game he pitched, right? And then the next game someone else won when they played the Monarchs again.
Well, somewhere in my files, I have a story, an article from Ray L. Doan, and he said that Satchel was supposed to pitch that particular game, and somehow they had a money dispute, and he didn't pitch. The guy who did pitch that game, he's also in this Buck O'Neill book from 1938. At that particular time, he was in Peoria, Illinois. I'm trying to think of his name right now, but yeah. Yep, that's correct. So the Monarchs lost the last game, and from there, they got such great publicity out of Denver that the rest of the year, wherever they played, they broke the attendance records. Yeah. I know they went down to Wichita and they played a game, and that broke the all-time record that was surpassed by Dizzy Dean in 34, at the end of 34. So two of the biggest crowds that year were the Monarchs, once playing the House of David, and then the Monarchs playing Dizzy Dean in Wichita.
Oh, so, very good. Hey, we didn't take a break. I'm hoping you'll stick around for one more segment with us.
All right, I'll hang around. Cool. I'll hang around.
Well, now I know that I am at least capable of learning, guys, because I've learned some of everything that I know. I've learned from Phil Dixon and learned from Chris. So we'll be back in just a second on Rob Bird's Moondog Show. Rob Bird!
Hi, Tina Goodrich here with Jake Way Realtors, local to the South Haven community. I've been a full-time realtor for 16 years in Southwest Michigan. Let me put my years of knowledge to work for you. In today's market, you need a savvy realtor. Find me on Facebook or Instagram, or call me at 269-759-1076. Remember, when you think real estate, list with Tina.
It is true. You can get quality social media marketing, radio time, and video production in one place. Moondog Productions specializes in all three. Now is the time to increase your presence and keep yourself in the public eye. Through Rob Bird's Moondog Show, Moondog Productions offers radio advertising, social media marketing, and video production that will get you noticed. Call Moondog Productions at 269-872-3049 to find out how we can design a program that will fit your budget.
If you have branches hanging over your roof or weakened rotting trees near your home, then call UFC Tree Care. At UFC Tree Care, we specialize in preventing the devastating damage that can be caused to your home or property, because the chances of that happening are greatly increased with winter weather. If you don't already have a tree service, call us for a free quote. Go to UFCTreeCare.com for contact information. We also offer residential and commercial snow plowing. And most important, don't forget to tell us that Moondog sent you.
We're back on Rob Bird's Moondog Show. Chris Siriano, Tina Goodrich now in the studio with us, and Mason Dixon, of course, who's itching to get in a question, and I'm gonna try to get that to that question here quickly. But I do have to say really quick, we do have a website, moondogshow.com. I really don't even care, but we should say it at least one time.
Okay.
Because, yeah, the information on baseball with Phil has been just too darn good. So, all right, well, I have no idea where we were.
Well, then that's a good time for me to ask my question.
I guess
so,
it would.
Folks, if you're just joining us, we're talking to Phil S. Dixon, who's a expert on the Negro Leagues, and he's featured in this House of David movie, the, what's it called?
House of David, Life Everlasting.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. And you can see it later today. All right, so I'm looking at this picture of these old House of David baseball players, and they got their hair down to their waist and stuff, and I'm wondering if the audience is, you know, if the people in the stands, if they was like being like rude towards them and stuff, and calling them girls or just, you know, doing a lot of that insulting,
picking
stuff
on them.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? They were pretty rugged guys. They just had long hair. That was probably the wrong crew to pick on.
Right.
I know a lot of time they would have fun. I remember reading a story about they pulled up in a small town and they pulled in front of the local barber shop. And the barber looked out the window and he just knew that he was going to make a lot of money. And they looked in the window of the barber shop, got back in the car and left. They weren't getting a haircut.
No, no. That wasn't going to get them to where they wanted to go.
Yeah, hey. No, these guys were rugged baseball players, and some of them, you know, especially when they started hiring guys who were outside of the colony, they didn't get their hair quite as long, but they all had the beards. So,
right. Well, they better be fairly rugged, consider how much time they spent on the side of the road with broken vehicles. Right. Cause it seems like I've got a ton of pictures of them fixing tires, and they're all the one or two guys are under there trying to fix it, and the other guys are all sitting off on the side of the road. But I do have to ask, being these are all men of God, did they ever have any bench clearing brawls or anything? I mean, that's just part
question.
Of baseball.
Well, I remember a guy who played for the House of David. I interviewed him. And he told me that Grover Cleveland Alexander was pitching. And Grover usually came in and pitched maybe 1, 2, 3 innings at the most, and then he would go sit down. He'd be retired for the day. Well, the House of David got a rally going, and Grover Cleveland got a chance to bat in the first inning. And Andy Cooper of the Monarchs hit him with the ball.
Plonked him. Mm-hmm. That'll cause a problem.
It must have hurt pretty good. And Grover Cleveland was pretty angry about that. So he pitched the first, the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, the seventh. Yeah. Finally, one of the House of David players came up and said, are you going to leave the game? He said, I'm not leaving the game till I hit that N-word back.
Did he do it?
Back, but he pitched. Then for the people who came out that day, they got a chance to see a rare Grover Cleveland complete game.
Wow. That would be something to see that for
That's
sure.
A good story.
So, well, obviously, if he pitched all those innings, he faced that guy a few times. He missed him all the other times. What's up with that?
He couldn't get him.
Right. He was a little too quick.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and the players, they really made it fun. I remember another story. It involved Andy Cooper. He was pitching, and a guy was giving him a hard time. And tell him he couldn't strike him out. So anyway, the guy hits a pop-up, and it just right by the mound, a third baseman could have caught it, and Andy Cooper ran over and said, don't catch that ball. And it was in foul territory. He said, don't catch that ball. He said, I got to strike this guy out.
Mm-hmm.
They make an error on purpose so they could prove a point.
I've dropped a ball on purpose to strike somebody out before. So I get it. We never did quite get the questions. Were there a bench clearing brawl? Did the teams?
I never heard of one. I never ever
I,
heard of one.
I do not remember any. I've never ran across one, but I can tell you this: one House of David player I interviewed, his name was Benson. Mm-hmm. He was up in Iowa, and he told me that the mysterious thing that they had was they never knew where the Monarchs stayed.
Right.
Of course, they could stay in the White Hotel, but the Monarchs had to stay in different places, right? And he said it was just amazing to them that they would go out to wherever they were going to play. They never see the Monarchs and since the night before, and they would pull up. And, you know, they never knew where the Monarchs were staying. They never had any idea until game time.
Right.
They never saw them.
I still wonder, because I just know how men are, and when you get into a battle, and playing baseball is a battle. I wonder if they ever said, hey, number nine, after we eat dinner tonight in the alley, you and I.
What about against the two black teams playing against each other? Were there a lot of skirmishes between them?
There could be. There could be. I can think of some ones, Satchel Paige hitting someone with the ball, and the guy getting tired that he chased him after the bat. with a bat.
Wow.
I know who Papa told me that one of his players, Ted Page, used to carry a little small caliber pistol.
Oh, dang.
Oh,
in his jock strap.
Oh, well,
hope that don't go off.
He was running with two guns, wasn't he?
Yeah. It's probably kind of rough sliding. So
make sure the safety's on.
He had to make sure all of his doubles were stand up, though.
That's a good story. I like that one for sure.
Guys would get heated. They get heated at umpires. I remember a story, Hurley McNair. Somebody came after the umpire, and they started chasing at the umpire. He grabbed a bat and reversed fields, and he chased the player.
Wow. Right.
That was the last game he worked for the Kansas City Monarchs.
I guess.
Right. You know, I remember the movie. What movie was that? Bull Durham. When they're like, man, we play too hard. We need a day off. So all the middle of the night, they went and turned all the sprinklers on at the field. You know, did the House of David guys ever do something like that? I mean, when they're playing every night and then triple headers on the weekend, seems like they might be looking for a way to say, I just need a day off.
Well, the only way you got a day off was probably for it to rain.
Yep.
At least, especially in the night.
Hence the sprinklers being turned on in the middle of the night.
Yeah. Right.
Hey, you know, it's really important to probably mention this when you talked about how important it was. You know, the Kansas City Monarchs introduced night baseball on the Barnstorming Trail, and they had the portable lights. Well, for 1930, that's what the Monarchs did all season. But for the 1931 season, they leased the lights to the House of David and Ray L. Doan, who was the promoter. And so the House of David went to cities that the Monarchs had not the year before. So I was just in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. The first night baseball game ever played there was the House of David, 1931, with the Kansas City Monarchs.
On
Knights.
Forbes Field.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
I did learn.
That would have been the Monarchs in 1930. Right. But there's the House. How about this one? The Cincinnati's Crosley Field, Grover Cleveland pitched there in 1931. Now, he didn't have the House of David team because they had a lot of outlaw minor league players. And so they couldn't let those players play. So they got a local team to come in, like some semi-pros from Cincinnati. And Grover Cleveland pitched for them against the Cincinnati Reds in Redland, be Red Field, 1931. But these are the same lights. So that was very important because many people saw their first night baseball ever through the Kansas City Monarchs or the House of David in 1930 and 1931.
Nice. And with that, I have to say it's time for us to go. It kind of sucks that we got to go because this is such good information, but it's time for Real Estate, or Let's Talk Real Estate with Tina Goodrich time. So I want to say thank you for your time. Phil, you've been awesome.
Thank you, Phil.
Well, it's my pleasure, and Guy, I had a great time, and anytime you need to talk baseball, just let me know.
All right. Do you have a website really quick you can throw out to us?
Yeah, it's NLB Alive, like Negro League Baseball Alive.com.
There you go. Go buy one of his books.
Beautiful.
All right.
Hopefully we'll see you soon, sir.
All right, then. And you guys take it easy, and just a pleasure to talk to you always.
Right on.
Take care.
All right. We'll be back with Tina Goodrich on Let's Talk Real Estate with Tina Goodrich on Rob Bird's Moondog Show.